For whatever reason, I feel that I'm constantly drawn back to the sea. While I enjoy being out anywhere in nature, such as deserts, forests, and even lakes, there's no substitute to being out by the ocean, where I'm reminded of ancient mythologies laid out by seafaring civilizations of the Mediterranean, especially concerning the lost continent of Atlantis. I often wonder about how many of our modern religions and mythologies actually have their roots in the Pleistocene, or Ice Age, when Atlantis was said to have existed, being passed down to us in our current age, retold with new names and through new languages. While recorded history is only a few thousand years old, humanity's oral tradition stretches back for many more millennia, with mankind in a state of collective amnesia, in large part due to periodic global cataclysms that force civilizations to start over from scratch, except for ancient stories passed down to us in the form of myths and fairy tales. Enchanted forests are described in the oldest folklore from regions where forests are common and are often alluded to as a place of magic and danger, a location beyond where people normally travel, where strange things might occur and strange people might live. Monsters, witches, fairies, dragons, dwarves, elves, giants, gnomes, trolls, unicorns, and other mythical creatures are depicted in books of fantasy for centuries, but whose oral tradition go all the way back to prehistory. Some stories have trees that talk, or with branches that will push people off their horses. Others feature sorcerers and witches living somewhere in the depths of the forest. Anthropologically speaking, they represent places unknown to the characters, and provide situations of transformation and liminality, a word which comes from the Latin word limen, meaning threshold, and is used in the context of the ambiguity or disorientation that occurs in the middle stages of a rite of passage, when participants no longer hold their pre-ritual status, but have not yet begun the transition to the status they will hold when the rite is complete. So, it's where one is standing at the threshold between their previous way of being and the new way, or identity, which completing the rite establishes. In Norse myth and legend, Mirkwood was a dark and dangerous forest that separated various lands. Heroes and even gods had to traverse it with difficulty. Back in the early 1800s, Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm were brothers who, while working as librarians, put together a collection of 86 stories, mostly from Germanic folklore, first published in 1812, and in all of them, the hero always goes into the forest. Acting as a place of transformation, the forest can also be a place of magical refuge, such as with Snow White, who escaped from her stepmother into a forest with dwarves. It is in the forest that the dwarf of Rumpelstiltskin reveals his name, allowing the heroine a way to free herself. In a study published in the journal Royal Society Open Science, a folklorist and anthropologist say that the popular stories and fairy tales are much older than originally thought. Instead of dating from the 1500s, the researchers say that some of these classic stories date back thousands of years. For example, Beauty and the Beast and Rumpelstiltskin to be about 4,000 years old. This contradicts previous speculation that story collectors, like the Brothers Grimm, were relaying tales that were only a few hundred years old. In the article, the team tracked the presence of the tales in 50 Indo-European or Aryan language-speaking populations. They were able to find the ancestries of 76 tales, tracking them backward using language trees. As they tracked, they found evidence that some of the tales were actually based in other stories. More than a quarter of the stories turned out to have ancient roots. Jack and the Beanstalk was rooted in a group of stories classified as the boy who stole Ogre's treasure, and could be traced back to when Eastern and Western Indo-European languages split more than 5,000 years ago. And a folktale called The Smith and the Devil, about a blacksmith selling his soul in a pact with the devil in order to gain supernatural abilities, was estimated to go back 6,000 years. In it, a blacksmith strikes a deal with a malevolent supernatural being, such as the devil, death, or a genie. The blacksmith exchanges his soul for the power to weld any materials together. He then uses this power to stick the villain to an immovable object, such as a tree, to renege on his side of the bargain. This basic plot is stable throughout the Indo-European speaking world, from India to Scandinavia, according to this research. The findings seem to confirm the long-disregarded theory of fairy tale writer Wilhelm Grimm, who thought that all Indo-European or Aryan cultures shared common tales. Some of the fairy tales go back thousands of years older than the earliest literary records, going back into the Bronze Age. The study said that this tale could be traced back to the Proto-Indo-European or Aryan society, when metallurgy likely existed and there was an archaeological and genetic evidence of massive territorial expansions by nomadic tribes from the southern Russian steppe and the northern shores of the Black Sea between 5 and 6,000 years ago. These findings are interesting, as a little over 7,000 years ago, the Black Sea, which was formed by melted glaciers, was a freshwater lake, until an event that geologists and anthropologists call the Black Sea Deluge happened, which not only flooded the people living near the shores, but the water was no longer usable for agricultural purposes, which may be a major impetus for the first waves of what is historically known as the Aryan invasions, where the Proto-Indo-Europeans, or Aryans, migrated to places where we find rivers for agricultural purposes, such as the Indus Valley, which did not have horses before the Aryans arrived, implementing an ethnic caste system, the remnants and traces of which can still be found in India today, not to mention Sanskrit, which is an Indo-European language. They also settled Iraq between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, establishing what eventually became some of the earliest empires of the Holocene, meaning our current age, the time following the Ice Age. Of course, these Aryans also penetrated into Europe, introducing domesticated animals to the continent, such as cows. And even today, Northern Europeans are among the most lactose-tolerant people on Earth, a genetic trait that comes directly from milk-drinking Aryans, and is a clear genetic marker of the Aryan roots and genetic affinities in Scandinavia and the Germanic people. Another shared genetic indicator is blood type, such as a high degree of Rh negative, which I cover in my book, Species with Amnesia, and identify as a trait, part of the haplotype, that can be traced back into the Pleistocene, or Ice Age, to Cro-Magnon, the name of the first specimen found in a cave near the Atlantic, in the Pyrenees. Cro-Magnon is the direct ancestor of the population that settled near the Black Sea and Anatolia after the Ice Age, which incidentally is where Noah settled in the Bible, Mount Ararat, which is part of the Caucasus Mountains in modern Turkey and Armenia, and where the term Caucasian comes from, and from where the Aryans spread their languages, domesticated animals, and agricultural civilization from, and why they were considered the ethnic, blue-eyed nobility of every agricultural society of the Holocene, no exceptions. This may help to explain this quote by Rudolf Steiner when he said, quote, "The greatest part of the Atlantean population declined, and from a small portion are descended the so-called Aryans who comprise present-day civilized humanity." Which brings me to another interesting quote by U.S. Congressman Ignatius Donnelly, who wrote in his book, Atlantis, the Antediluvian World, quote, "Did the Aryan race come from Atlantis? The center of the Aryan migrations was Armenia. Here too is Mount Ararat, where it is said the Ark rested, identified with the flood regions, representing the usual transfer of Atlantis legend by the Atlantean people to a high mountain in their new home. The Greeks, who are Aryans, trace their descent from the people who were destroyed by the flood, as did other races clearly Aryan." Sultan is an Arabic word meaning strength, authority, or rulership, used as the title of rulers who claimed almost full sovereignty without claiming the overall caliphate, where a caliph is an Islamic political leader considered a religious successor to the Prophet Muhammad. A sultan is closer to what we think of as a king, or a powerful governor of a province within the caliphate, but the title still carries religious significance. The Arabian Nights is a collection of Middle Eastern folk tales compiled in Arabic during the Islamic Golden Age from the 8th to the 14th century, which trace their roots back to ancient Arabic, Persian, Indian, Greek, Turkish, and Jewish folklore. The main story is about an ancient Iranian or Aryan king that ruled in India and China that was shocked to discover that his wife had been unfaithful, and so he had her killed. In his bitterness and grief, he begins to marry a succession of virgins, a new one each day, only to execute each one the next morning before she has a chance to dishonor him. This goes on until there are no more virgins left, so the Sultan's advisor, whose job it was to provide the virgins, offers his own daughter as the next bride. On the night of their marriage, she begins to tell the Sultan a tale, but it does not end. This makes him curious about how the story ends, and thus he postpones her execution in order to hear the conclusion. This goes on for 1,001 nights. There are different versions that all have different individual detailed endings, but they all end with the Sultan eventually giving his wife a pardon and sparing her life.
This was a time of wealthy and powerful rulers, a time of magnificent palaces, of desert fortresses, kasbahs, and harems, a time when Arabic culture dominated vast areas of the ancient world. The opening pages of the Arabian Nights tell of a mythical king or sultan who was so angered to discover that his wife had been unfaithful to him that he had her put to death. Fearing further sexual betrayals by any of his future wives, the Sultan decided to marry a virgin each day, take his new bride to bed, and then have her beheaded the following morning. For years, the carnage of marriage and murder continued. Eventually, few eligible young maidens remained alive in the Sultan's kingdom. The nation's highest government official, the vizier, could no longer find any women to take the deadly marriage vows with the Sultan. All had already succumbed to his bloody decree. All, that is, except one. She was the vizier's own beloved daughter, a beautiful young woman by the name of Scheherazade. With no choice but to remain loyal to his sultan, the vizier reluctantly introduces Scheherazade to him. The sultan willingly accepts his lovely new bride, sealing her fate. It is here that the Arabian Nights surprises its readers with the first of many unexpected turns, for the text reveals that Scheherazade devises a plan that may save her life. After hours of passionate lovemaking, Scheherazade playfully asks the Sultan if he would like to hear a story. Always ready for a little diversionary entertainment, he agrees. And so Scheherazade begins to weave her spell. She starts to tell him a fable of high adventure and intrigue. By sunrise, the Sultan is still engrossed in the tale. Scheherazade has captured his unremitting attention. Clearly, she is a uniquely gifted storyteller. But with the dawn must come her fate. In accordance with the Sultan's decree, she must now die. Yet it is at this crucial point that Scheherazade surprisingly breaks the cruel cycle of fate which seems to await her. By not quite finishing her story, she leaves the Sultan begging for more. But royal duties call. He cannot hear the rest of her adventurous yarn now. The sentence will be postponed. Tonight, she must conclude her tale. That evening, when Scheherazade finishes her story, she immediately begins another, drawing on characters from the original plot. Amazingly, her royal husband again spares her life so that he may hear the continuation of the tale on the following night. The clever device of having one story grow out of the previous one continues for an uncanny 1,001 nights. Eventually, the Sultan abolishes the law calling for the death of his wife. It is a phenomenal accomplishment, assuring Scheherazade of her life and finally freeing the nation from the terrible decree. For this, the name of Scheherazade would echo through the centuries.
Through Scheherazade, the Western world was introduced to some of the best-loved adventure stories of all time. Many have become classics and are as popular now as when they were first told in seven locations as diverse as India, Egypt, China, Persia, and Africa. The tales in the Arabian Nights contain a rich assortment of larger-than-life characters who often struggle against immense odds with mythical beasts and monsters, supernatural beings, magical objects, and feats of great courage peppered throughout the stories. Many of them have a moral underpinning, containing a profound message of hope. But who was Scheherazade, the extraordinary woman of whom so little is known? Was she merely the daughter of a sultan's vizier who lived in some long-forgotten corner of Arabia over 1,000 years ago? Or as some believe, was she herself as fictitious as the character she described in her stories? We may never know the answer to the riddle of Scheherazade's true identity, but if she was merely another character conjured up by the real author of the Arabian Nights, who was responsible for the stories, and where did these ideas come from? Did the original writer possess one of history's most imaginative minds, or were the tales based on real events from a long-gone Aryan era? Whoever compiled these tales is believed to have lived in Baghdad around the 8th or 9th centuries, and whatever their mysterious origin, the stories that have journeyed down to us through the centuries have firmly established themselves as some of the best-loved tales in literature. That said, the name Scheherazade is definitely Persian, which prior to the Islamification of Iran was, according to Darius the Great 2,500 years ago, known as the Land of the Aryans. While presented in Arabic, the Islamic world presented was not pictured in a very orthodox terms. There were genies, fairies, and talismans, what we would call magic, a word which comes down to us from the Magus, or Zoroastrian priest class, of the ancient Aryans prior to the arrival of the Muslims. Prior to the Arabic compilations, these tales, including similar stories such as Sinbad the Sailor, that surely came from a demographic not only familiar with the sea, but no doubt a seafaring civilization which dominated the Mediterranean, bringing us to the Phoenicians, Trojans, Minoans, the ancient Greeks and Egyptians, and if we are to believe their mythologies, likely all the way back to the mythical Atlanteans. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.